corporations will be targeting as well.
So, Sean King, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Black Lives Matter activist, senior justice writer for the New York Daily News. And we will link to your columns at democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! You can go to our website for transcripts, video, audio, podcasts of all of our shows over this 20 years as we celebrate our anniversary. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guster, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Miriam Barnard, Hugh Grant, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is WHFR Dearborn, and we're coming to you live from Henry Ford College. So thank you for being our listeners today. We've got local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area, so listen up. This is always important because no show on the radio or on TV does local like we do. And so we're happy to be here. My name is Jake Koronek, station advisor at WHFR, as well as co-host of the show. And joining me in the studio is our WHFR news director, John Conroy. Hi there, John.
Hello, Jay. It's good to be here.
Okay. How was the drive from Gros Isle today?
No worries. Very okay. Smooth.
That's good. I'm going to ask you a question about Gros Isle's elections when we talk about that a little bit. Although I didn't bring the article that has the names, but apparently there is five candidates for your city. Is it like city council, township council?
Township board.
Yeah, so yep. It's a little bit of a battle there. Most of them are newbies.
Right.
So, it'll be a interesting contest if... especially if none of the voters know any of those people. But I assume it's a small community there, so I bet you certainly know all five.
I do, and okay. And they are mostly, everyone's pretty well known that's running,
okay.
And has been in various other commissions in one way or another, so that mm-hmm. they'll have a good start.
Well, that's good. Yeah, okay. Well, let's take a look I'm going to start it going very quickly through some of the papers that we haven't, both Press and Guide and Times Herald, and also Arab American News, that we haven't looked at in the last couple of weeks. Last week we did, I think, about 45 minutes on the Regional Transit Authority issue, primarily, mm-hmm. That's going to be on the ballot in November. And I wanted to talk today, especially because there was a big letter signed by almost a couple dozen district superintendents that support the RISA proposal that's also going to be on the ballot in November in this area for everyone to vote on. It's additional support for our schools. And it's interesting how why that's needed, of course, and exactly what's going on there. So we'll cover that. But back on October 11th, the Dearborn Press and Guide have a story right on their front page about very, very brief summaries, though. But Katie Hetrick, who writes for the education beat, if you will, for the Press and Guide, part-time writer, but a great writer, great in-depth writer, and she really knows the Dearborn school system after years of covering it. So she has little portraits there of the candidates. So four people, including two with board experience, are vying for 2 6-year seats on the Dearborn Board of Education. And we have mentioned in the past that there are, first of all, Hussein Berry has been on the board before. So if those of you in Dearborn don't know about Hussein Berry, he's been there many terms on the board. And if you don't know him and want to reelect him already, I guess he didn't, catch your attention in office. So an incumbent has a chance to, make themselves known and actually sort of guarantee that they're going to get reelected because they do stuff that people like. They have the option to do that because they're they're in that office. Whereas the challengers have to make a tough case over and over again. One of them, Fadwa Hamoud, also is an incumbent. And she's a local attorney, but she was appointed by the board itself to replace a trustee who had moved out of the district. And I just wanted to mention that on 10/13, that is last Thursday, on the ArabAmericanNews.com website, and in their paper last week, the story was printed. They did a nice spotlight article about Fadwa Hamoud. They're doing all of the candidates in a similar way. And so here's just a little bit of information about her from the Arab American News. Fadwa Hamoud is looking to extend her tenure on the Dearborn School Board for an additional 6 years, following her appointment last year when a vacancy gave her an opportunity to fill a seat. Hamoud told the AA News that she's a proud product of the Dearborn Public School System. She graduated from Fordson, attended Henry Ford College and the University of Michigan Dearborn, and then got a law degree from Wayne State University. Besides being a trustee, she's also a Wayne County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney, a wife and mother of two. She said she has a personal interest in the success of the district because it'll be, of course, obviously here, the hub of her children's upbringing. She also views the position as an opportunity to give back to the community. Quote from her, "I'm strongly committed to the continued success and viability of our school system for the benefit of all Dearborn children and residents. Representing the citizens of Dearborn, I have used my skills and knowledge to work towards making our schools second to none while protecting the precious resources for our taxpayers." She went on to say that while student achievement continues to rise, there's always room for improvement. She's been working diligently for more than a year to evaluate programs to ensure that students are receiving robust educational opportunities. She cited a recent accomplishment at Henry Ford College with the introduction of an affordable 4-year culinary arts degree program. And of course, that's been going on that was in progress quite a while, and was primarily the State Board of Ed that allowed that to be created, first of all. I mean, we had asked for it for years, along with some other schools, community colleges in Michigan that have advanced and very well-known degrees, 2-year degrees in culinary arts. And because they have those specialized facilities, it's hard for any 4-year school to actually rise to the occasion, you might say. So there's not many places for them to finish up their degree in Michigan that are convenient anyway, in terms of 4-year schools, and of course reasonably priced, and certainly all the community colleges of Michigan are much less expensive than the 4-year schools. So I'm just going to say that even the article almost implies that about this accomplishment of the college, the board didn't really do anything to it, and she's only been on, no disrespect, but I'm just saying she's only been there a year, and this whole proposal was made possible not by our Board of Ed, although they had to approve of the idea, of course, but the idea was to get the legislature to move on that. We're still waiting for the Michigan State Legislature to decide whether or not a 4-year degree is possible for community colleges who have very well-established and advanced facilities in a nursing area, and which is a desperately needed career, a lot of opportunities there, and the 4-year schools aren't turning out the graduates quite as much, and the few community colleges, such as Henry Ford College, have programs that can relatively easily be turned into a 4-year degree program. But the state of Michigan has to pass a ruling, a law that makes an exception, because primarily we're a 2-year school, a community college, but they've made exceptions for culinary arts, and I think they should be close to making an exception for nursing, because there's such a case to be made for that field, certainly. Healthcare, adequately staffed healthcare, helps us all. So there you go. Anyway, you should read the article. She goes on to say a few more things that she's enjoyed. This is Fadwa Hamoud, enjoyed all of her service on the Board of Ed, and she wants to do the best to make the whole situation the best. In a way, I'd have to say, I think every candidate could echo everything she said, except for, of course, her own employment and family situation. I haven't read anyone who has said anything else. or has a specialized agenda. Also in Arab American News, yesterday was posted, and it'll be in their print edition this weekend, a spotlight article on Qader Farhat. Qader has been on this show several times talking about issues involving and his advocacy for more equity and awareness of blind students and blind citizens in this community. So he is a very intelligent young man. He graduated, I'm looking at the story now, from Arab American News. He emigrated to the U.S. from Lebanon in 2009, and he didn't know a word of English, but he is very able to communicate intelligently in English now, as at the age of 23. And he of course, as I said, he's been very active in using his disability to bring attention to a challenge often plaguing the community, lack of awareness of special needs. And so he does have a specific issue in addition to, I'm sure, all the general support for improving, continuing to improve our Dearborn schools and our success with our children. But he says, the special needs program is the top priority of my platform. I would love to see Dearborn be more inclusive. It's vital that special needs students are accommodated both inside and outside the classroom. And he, of course, talks about the difficulty of getting a solid and equitable education in our system today, anywhere in our system today. He did get an associate degree in pre-special education here at Henry Ford College already, and is currently majoring in political science at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. He speaks very passionately, as we know, from his time on this show, not as a candidate, but certainly in his efforts to be an advocate for special needs programs in this community. And he wants to increase parent, as I see in the article, and student involvement, too. That's very important. I know my daughter, always quoting my daughter, who's a teacher in Southfield Public Schools, she is, of course, required to be there extended hours, usually till 9 o'clock at night, for parent discussions with their teachers. Mm-hmm. But it's up to the parents to show up.
Right.
So she has, you know, a lot of students over one day. And the last time they did this, she had two parents show up out of over 60,
wow,
you know, that could have come and talked to her. Yeah. So I guess she's doing such a great job that the parents don't think there's anything to talk to her about. But you would think the parents would just like to hear some sort of specific insights that maybe couldn't be written down, or maybe more personal or something, but would like to come and talk to their teachers. But not many did that the last time for her in Southfield. I don't know how those sessions go in Dearborn. It's hard to say. But
I just say
it's important.
I believe it is. And it's just the lost art of one-on-one conversation seems to be with the schools as well. And I know when my kids were going to school, I didn't want to miss that opportunity. Mm-hmm. I was real glad to go, however bad or good they were doing. I wanted to get a chance to hear what the teacher had to say, you know.
Well, mm-hmm. Although I was a divorced parent when my daughter was in middle school and in high school, even though I saw her every week, but even her mother, who she lived with during that time, most of the time anyway, did not know that the school, that the Dearborn Public Schools, had placed my daughter on the dummy track.
Oh.
And I'm exaggerating the name here, but they didn't think she was smart. They put her in with the poorest students as if she was never going to college because she wasn't able. And I knew my daughter was smart. I knew that, I mean, really, really smart. I mean, reading and everything, even when she was only 6 or 7 years old. And I'm not saying she took after me necessarily, but I'm not saying I had any genetic influence there. But really, and even, you know, my daughter's mother knew that she was smart. And we didn't find out until a teacher pointed out in the 10th or 11th grade, what are you doing in this class? Hmm. You're so good at science, at math, you should be in what
much
used to be called the college prep.
Yeah.
You should be taking these more advanced classes.
My daughter, AP-type courses, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, getting you ready for college, if not college-level things, and they had those in the Dearborn Public Schools. They have those, of course. And so how did that happen? How is it that no counselor told us that they made this decision, mm-hmm, to put her on the as we call it, person outside, unofficially, the dummy track. How did that happen? And you know, for years, though, she was telling us that her classes really, they weren't very good. Other students were, you know, not supporting the teachers. The teachers didn't care about the students. But that was because she was in with a group that wasn't very well motivated either, and the teachers probably were frustrated because they got also dumped on them, the poorest students, who they couldn't hope to get through, but they had to somehow
teach them.
Yeah, I had to work with them, but a greater challenge, more frustrations for them. So thank goodness for a very special science teacher in 10th grade. I don't remember his name now, but he actually got her in her last year and a half, three semesters. Oh, it was 10th grade, so there'd be all 11th. So she had 2.5 years getting the more challenging classes. And guess what? She started really liking school and, of course, getting really good grades because the classes were at the right level for her, that is, more advanced. So, but I don't know, but you're right. I'm thinking, did I miss some parent-teacher conference or counselor conference, or did I miss a memo that came home? Her mother says they never communicated with her either. So so things can happen, and I do think that all parents, as many opportunities as possible, should do a one-on-one with the school and the counselors and not just accept what they tell you because maybe they make mistakes.
Just to me, like doctors are not God, teachers are not God,
right.
and you
always get a second opinion.
You get a second opinion.
Basic idea.
But you don't want your kids labeled, and if they are starting to be labeled, like you found out, then you have the opportunity to make that happen or make that change if you're connected with the teacher.
Going on with the article about. Qadir Farhat, who is, again, running for Dearborn School Board, one of the four candidates for the six-year full terms. There's also partial term, two people running for the partial term, but I'll mention them briefly. They haven't been spotlighted yet by any stories. Farhat said he's also very concerned about the fact that he thinks the district is ignoring another growing area of potential arts programs. Over the years, both theater and music programs have diminished across the district. And I don't know about the, they usually teach art drawing or sculpture or something sometimes in the schools too, painting, and I'm not sure whether that's going up or down, but he believes that theater and music programs have diminished, and that's unfortunate. Oh, that was one thing that challenged my daughter too, it's the high school in the middle of the town here. My goodness. Fortson is on the east side, and Dearborn High is the west, and the one in the middle is
Crestwood?
Etzel Ford. Thank you. Oh, okay. Another Ford, yes. Okay. Actually, Etzel is the son of Ford, isn't he?
Yes.
Of a Ford, because he's in the Ford family. Anyway, bad joke. So, yeah, Etzel Ford. She graduated from Etzel Ford, and if it wasn't for the theater program, extracurricular program, she wouldn't have really enjoyed high school at all. You know, and I mean, she did very well in all the academic courses, but the theater program, although, boy, they had a bad theater physical plant, though, bad lighting, the drapes were falling down and so on. But she loved that kind of creative experience, and she had a great teacher who now retired, of course. And I don't know how it's, in fact, I have not heard about Etzel Ford High School theater program now. I wonder if they even have one. Because you look in the papers, you see Dearborn High is doing one.
Right.
I haven't heard that Fortson has one as such a program. I haven't heard of a production over there, and I maybe just have missed it. Oh, well. So Qadir Farhat, rather than speaking generalities, he wants to support, just summing up a little bit, the special needs programs in our district and the arts programs. And just looking at the conclusion here, online courses. He thinks, he said the college, Henry Ford College, appears to have an increasing presence in online courses, which he perceives as a downfall. So he's not in favor of online. He says, although we do understand some can't go physically to a classroom, having an excessive number of online classes is not credible. I'm against having too much of it. A professor won't have an accurate measurement of the work. A student won't get exposed to different and unique cultures and perspectives in Dearborn. That's not good. Well, certainly it is a different experience. We can all talk about that. I almost taught an online course here at the college before my retirement and had to completely rethink it and redesign it to make up for the fact that, yes, you don't have that in-person back and forth questioning. You can't see the look of either puzzlement or disgust on the face of the student after you say something as a teacher, and that's helpful either way. So you can, you know, you play the audience, right? You
just, or like God forbid, a smile,
like a theater production, right?
Yeah. And
luckily, I always had a few students that would laugh at my jokes, but I never knew if they really wanted to laugh or if they're just trying to make me happy, so I would give them a good grade. You know, that's a problem. Online, you don't have that issue. But it's quite a challenge. I think many of our programs, and even Kitty Love, who's in the studio now preparing for her Highway 61 show starting at 2 o'clock today, The Best in the Blues, until 4 o'clock. She's in online, if I may refer to her situation just briefly. Okay.
Astronomy and English 132.
Astronomy and English 132. And, of course, she raises the question with astronomy. Isn't astronomy looking at those things in the sky and figuring out what's going on? And, of course, online, I guess you get some visuals, some pictures. You have a textbook.
We have computer animation, and it has these little things that do...
I'll repeat what you're saying.
...what the stars are said to do.
Okay, so there's computer animation that's added to the online experience for the astronomy class that she's doing online. So it is a very different experience. I totally understand that... Qadir Farhad's point is that we have to be careful. Certainly, I totally believe, as an educator of almost 50 years now at Henry Ford College, it's a different experience. Some classes maybe can't be taught online at all, but there is something gained and something lost in every situation where you change the medium of communication significantly, and we should be aware of that. I think it would be totally wrong, and I completely agree that it should not be everywhere all the time. I'm also against autonomous cars, too, which is letting the computer do it almost all the time, everywhere. No, don't. Not good idea. Not a good idea. But that's not our show today. So anyway, Farhad has opinions, strong opinions, and he has issues that he wants to follow through on, and that's... that's his position, and you should read about him more in the Arab American News, which will be their print edition, which I think is out on Fridays, right, John? Maybe.
Yes.
I don't know if it's distributed as fully or not, but certainly by the weekend or by Monday, it should be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, at the Dearborn Administrative Services Center, the new City Hall, and other places.
And the Arab American
office. Yeah, of course.
And it's normally by 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, you can start seeing it distributed.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sometimes not till Saturday, though.
And it is a free publication, and half of it is in Arabic. But it's a very useful paper. It's their 32nd year of publishing, as they're proud to say. And it's doing a lot of things, a lot of special articles, because they seem to have more reporters and more space for local news than our other more traditional places. But they're online for free, too, ArabAmericanNews.com. Okay, so there's little spotlights on Fadwa Hamoud and Qadir Farhad. Okay, got my pen here. Let's see what else is going on. Of course, there's events always coming up this weekend, and we will cover some of those, too. On the show, but you have to save the best till last, right? The fun things, okay. The hard news we've got to do first. Did I mention ever on this show that Dearborn Public Schools has finally sold the former Howe School site, which was located just north of what used to be Oakwood Hospital, now Beaumont Oakwood, and Beaumont Hospital Dearborn. Okay, not Beaumont Oakwood, Beaumont Hospital Dearborn. They got $2.3 million for it, a 10-acre parcel. What's interesting is that the person who bought it hasn't stated yet, and maybe not doesn't even know what they're going to use it for.
Mm-hmm.
But they think it's sort of good for a business location, not really a school. So The superintendent, Glenn Malico of Dearborn Public Schools, said he was told the property would be used for a nursing home or other senior living facility. And that would be convenient because if they need to go from the hospital to a senior facility, yeah. There's one right across the street.
Rehab center right there.
Right. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. And so a lot of people might make that decision just because it's so close to maybe the hospital they're already being treated in, even though there's many good facilities in the area. But certainly this would get people's attention since it's so close to the Beaumont Dearborn Hospital. Okay. All right. That was another week or so ago, Sunday, October 16th, Press and Guide. But it's good that the schools do have that extra money. They finally sold the property, $2.3 million. Okay.
Doesn't hurt.
Well, Dearborn Times-Herald did a summary story of, and this is just from this last Wednesday, 2 days ago, since today is October the 21st, 2016. And they talk about areas that I haven't talked about because there's not all of Dearborn, but it's in the area. It's close by, and it's part of Dearborn. So here's the story. State House seats up for grabs in November 8th election. At the end of the November 8th election, general election, new faces will have won seats in the 9th and 11th State House districts. And how can they be so sure of that? Because everybody running is a new face. So they whichever candidates are chosen, they're all going to be new people, challengers, as we might say. But in this case, they're not challenging anyone because there's no incumbents running, but they're going to be new faces. So here's a little background just for your information if you're listening locally. And I guess why would people listen in California to our Dearborn news show? But nonetheless, things are a lot the same everywhere. So there's some morals here about stuff that happens here, I'm sure, and elsewhere too. But Democrat Jewel Jones and a Republican, Robert Pope, are vying for the 11th district seat with Republican James Stevens and Democrat Sylvia Santana are competing in the 9th district. Now, I'd have to say, because the story doesn't mention here, but there very well could be third-party candidates, too, in those races. I don't have my list in front of me, but never forget that both the Libertarian Party and the Green Party, and sometimes even Natural Law Party and the Congress Party and so on, they're on the ballot in Michigan, as is the Working Class Party. Next Friday, by the way, as an aside, we'll mention it at the end of the hour or two, we have Working Class Party candidate Marianne Herring here for 30 minutes to talk about her candidacy for the U.S. Congress 12th District. That's right, the Debbie Dingell District. We just call it the Dingell District since it's been John Dingell's and now his wife Debbie has been elected to that. Democrats, of course. But anyway, she's running for the 12th district, too, and it'd be very interesting to talk to her because it's a political party a lot of people never heard of before, and she can well explain it. Okay, and so let's see if there's anything else here we want to say about these people. Let's see. Well, where are these districts? The 9th district. Okay. Just letting somebody in the door here. I have a video monitor in the hallway. Very exciting, although distracting. The 9th district covers part of Dearborn and also part of Detroit, with the 11th district including parts of Dearborn Heights, Livonia, and Westland, along with all of Garden City and Inkster. So we get a little corner of the Dearborn area. 9th district goes sort of northeast and east of Dearborn, and the 11th district is in the northwest area and goes much further west to include all of the big cities of Dearborn, or parts of Dearborn Heights, but also Livonia, Westland, Garden City, and Inkster. So, okay. So Santana, who is running for the 9th district, is vying for the seat. Oh, it's currently held by her husband.
Her husband, yes.
Well, so people might know the name Santana, I guess, unless her husband's last name is something else. I'm not familiar. It is Santana.
It is Santana, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I'm just saying, you know, Susan DeBodge's husband's last name is Hamoud.
Right, right.
So I'm just, sometimes
no, it explains later in the article about Santana being the
I'm sure it does.
The husband.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, she has, of course, degrees from Eastern Michigan University and recently graduated from Michigan Political Leadership Program at Michigan State University. So her main goal, she says, if elected, would be to continue working with small businesses and economic corridors within the district, protecting neighborhoods from blight or pollution, and fight for the rights and dignity of seniors. Again, that would be going, she'd be going to the state house as a Democrat. Okay. And so it's a nice little article there about that. And now let's see, Stevens, who is the competition, Republican competition, he ran unopposed on the Republican side of the ballot in the primary. He did not respond to the questionnaire from the Times-Herald by press time. That doesn't bode well. I have to say, if you're looking up in vote411.org on the web for information about the candidates, or in the two publications, and he is physically grabbing them and holding them up in a radio station where no one who's listening can see them. But nonetheless, the Voter Guide, which is a tabloid form newspaper that's available for free, thanks to League of Women Voters at City Clerk's office and other places around town. And they're printed 10 by 14 stapled publication about specifically the Dearborn Heights ballot. And in both of these publications also give you, based on their returned questionnaires, a summary of responses from the candidates. Even people running for judge, you can find out about them and about what their priorities are and what the issues are that they see in their positions. I don't know anywhere else, for example, you could find out some background on the judges, for example. I mean, I just think that's great. One of the judges, one of the persons running for judgeship at one primary to get him here, Robert Fracano, former head of Wayne County, he lists his job. He's a professor at Wayne County Community College and private practice as a lawyer,
As a lawyer, right.
Yeah. It doesn't say what that is. Of course, you can be called a professor here at the college and just be part-time, too. So I'm not sure that he's a part-time person there, he doesn't say. But in case you didn't ever hear of Robert Fracano before, he does talk about what he thinks he could do in this judgeship position, as well as the other people. So I highly recommend this document, both these documents, the 2016 Michigan General Election Voter Guide, which is, again, sort of a tabloid newspaper for free around town, as well as the printed, stapled 10 by 14 pages about the Dearborn election. It's a Dearborn election, general election voter guide just for Dearborn Heights. And because it has background on these candidates. Not a lot, but it's better than nothing, I think. And have to say, if either the newspapers like Times Herald or Press and Guide or Arab American News or the League of Women Voters don't get questionnaires returned, I would be very dubious about the candidate as somebody I want to vote for. In other words, personally, my opinion, we'll do our caveat, John, but finish my opinion, wait,
okay,
and then you can do it.
Okay.
Okay. I won't vote for him. If I don't know about him, I can't vote for them. And if they don't respond to the newspapers and to the League of Women Voters, it's not much. We're just asking for a couple of sentences, a paragraph or two. Well, they don't deserve my ballot, my vote. Even if I get something in the mail from them, you know, why won't they respond to these public documents? You know, it's just not not something I can accept. But that's my opinion. And
views expressed on our journal program are those of the hosts and not necessarily those of WHFR and or Henry Ford College.
There you go. Okay, thank you, John.
I also want to add this, is that, you know, we as citizens should read all these publications before we do vote.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just to get you more informed before you do take that action to vote.
Right. Now, people can go vote already. So many people have done absentee ballots, and you do have to go and ask for one and sign a form, and they'll give you one. You can get the form mailed to you. You can sign it, return it in the mail. Then they'll send you the ballot. Then you can send the ballot back, but there's only like 2 weeks to go.
Yeah.
So, my goodness, it could still happen. But you could go to the city clerk's office in Dearborn or whatever your city hall is, and you can actually pick that up directly. You sign the form right there, and in fact, you can fill it out right there too. So you can fill it out and vote right there at the city clerk's office in your township office or your city hall office of city clerk, or take, of course, the proper ID with you. But you could do it now. But my feeling was, after almost 50 years of voting, is that a couple times I voted early, and then, oh my God, even though it was only a couple weeks early, I found out more about some candidates before the day of the election.
Yeah.
And, of course, some people are undecided until the last minute, you know. Often I'm that way at restaurants. I look at the menu. I don't know what I want, but as soon as the waitress says, what can we get for you, I know.
You make that suggestion.
Yeah, well, it's when I'm forced to, I'll make the decision. But, you know, it did give me that extra few seconds to continue glancing at the menu and thinking of how my stomach felt or whatever. You know, what did I eat earlier in the day? Should I have a balance of more vegetables or something? You know, I mean, so the extra time is not bad, especially if you're undecided and you need more time to find out more information. Either you do more research yourself or whatever. Now, listening to TV commercials is not the way to do it. Political TV commercials is not the way to do it. You need more in-depth knowledge or opinions from a variety of intelligent people who have more access to these candidates.
Just another unabashed plug for the League of Women Voters. They were out on the 11th of October for the last day of voter registration, just to get people to register to vote.
Sure.
who had not done this yet.
Yeah, that was.
And they were extremely successful in getting people on campus who hadn't registered to vote yet to sign up.
Here at Henry Ford College, we had, we had those tables for every day from the end of September, but especially October 7th, which was the last day to register. If you're not registered 11th. Now, folks, 11th?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, if you're not registered, you can't vote. I'm sorry. And, of course, the general election November 8th. You could still register now for the next time they have one,
right?
Which might be next spring. I don't know the next time there'll be an election. And once you're registered, if in that city, you're registered for life. You don't have to renew it. You don't have to show up every year or they take away your registration. If you're still, well, the same address too in the same city, of course, but then you're registered ongoing and there's no charge. There's no, you know, if you're not registered, you don't have the option even. You say, well, I don't believe in them. I don't understand. I think they're all corrupt. Yeah, but what if at the last minute you discover somebody who isn't corrupt in your opinion or who really deserves support? Maybe just one person locally that you met all of a sudden accidentally and, wow, they're great. They're going to do a great job if they get elected. And you can't help them because you're not registered. Or you've just blatantly decided you are registered and you blatantly decide, I'm just not going to support any of them. I'm not going to vote. That'll show them. In fact, it doesn't show them anything. No. It just shows them that you don't care and they don't have to care about you. That's what it shows them. I hate to be so blunt, but that's true, I think. Okay. So we're going to, again, give you little capsules of some of these candidates and mention the stories in the paper. But, you know, we've given you other sources, League of Women Voters, too, that you can educate yourself about these people. There are no additional debates that I know of, not in Dearborn, that are scheduled, not for the Board of Ed, not for any other offices in Dearborn. In Dearborn Heights, a couple stories in the Times-Herald, they have introduced a nuisance ordinance now, and will probably be approved. It's not yet. Allow for a fine or improvement, for a fine or improvement suggestions to a business if deemed a nuisance by the residents.
Okay.
And under the proposed amendment, any business operating within the can-can? Well, that's a misprint. How does a business operate within the can-can? What is a can-can? Even within a single can. What could that have been? That's right there on the front page of the Times-Herald. Dearborn Times-Herald, my goodness. Anyway, they're operating within the city. Can be deemed a nuisance after multiple complaints about drugs, alcohol, criminal, or customer issues. Oh, did I say Dearborn Heights? No. This is City of Dearborn. And why did it come up? It's because, you know, there have been incidents in nightclubs, specifically in West Dearborn area, that have disputes, shootings in some cases, whether inside their club or outside, nearby their outside of their perimeter of their facility, that has required the Dearborn police to come by. And there's been a cry for additional police support in those areas. And they're suggesting that maybe these businesses, if it's going to continue, and of course they could take away their liquor license, which would definitely, and I think they have from Narbar, I don't want to say for sure on that, I think they have already voted against that. That means that, of course, any whether or not the Narbar has lost their liquor license, if they're still there, they still have it. Okay, but nonetheless, they're thinking of doing that to more places. But in lieu of that, they could, if it doesn't get that serious, to force them out of business, they could just fine them or charge them for Dearborn police support. Like being on guard or patrolling outside very closely during their evenings that they're open. And apparently there is a version of a similar ordinance used in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So, and it hasn't been ruled unconstitutional or anything down there, I guess. So interesting. Now, Dearborn Heights is the other story on the front page. So their city council okayed a trial period for early public meeting comments. They're going to try it for 3 months. They're going to allow residents to speak before the city council starts their meeting. Why would that be important? Well, first of all, they don't have to stay until the bitter end, and maybe they'd leave or they have to leave early or something. The residents shouldn't be inconvenienced like that, even though it's the job of the city council to stay until the bitter end. And also, maybe some of their comments would influence some of the issues coming up. You know, I'm just saying, I can see the advantage of that. Of course, they'd be limited by time, but there's some advantage, so maybe that we'll see how that works out.
Our township boards always have a public comment before the actual meeting starts, but they limit those public comments to 3 minutes at a time.
Yes, that's typical, yeah. Boy, I'm glad they can't limit me to 3 minutes at a time on this show.
That would be impossible.
We can't do the new WHFR Journal in 3 minutes.
That wouldn't happen, though.
Nope. Here's an interesting op-ed piece, which I suggest you look at. And it's in the, again, the Times Herald that from this week, Wednesday, Dearborn Times Herald. It's a person whose name is, the author is Lee Hamilton, Lee H. Hamilton. And he happens to be a... at the Indiana University Center on Representative Government. And he was a member of the United States House of Representatives for 34 years, but a very, very interesting think piece. Do the debates help us choose wisely? And of course, he's referring to presidential debates. I agree with him that they don't really help you that much because the kind of information you need, and I'll read his conclusion, is not usually forthcoming in the formats and the time allowed. 2 minutes to sum up your position on anything? It's interesting that in the three presidential debates, global warming never came up.
No.
Never once.
I noticed that.
Never had a question about that. I guess because we know where they stand already. But nonetheless, there's a number of science topics that never came up, and I'm always interested. How much do our political candidates actually know and appreciate about the real world, that is, as documented by science? I'd like to know that myself. That's my opinion. Well, the conclusion of Lee Hamilton here about the do the presidential debates help us choose wisely, he says we want voters to go to the polls not just with a good idea of where the candidates want to take us and how they're going to get there. We also want voters to have a clear sense of how sound the candidate's judgment is, especially for a president, imagine, because it's a daily job, whereas House of Representatives, Senate, they get to vote on bills. They can contemplate. They can go back and forth. They don't implement them.
No.
They don't keep them working. They don't put them in place and so on. So the president is the facilitator of everything that happens in the United States, ultimately. and spokesperson for it too. And so how sound are the Kennedys' judgments? In other words, how well do they think on their feet at extended length? Not for 2 minutes or 1 minute responses or little quips or little jokes or catchphrases, because those can be memorized. Those can be given to you by other people. Mm-hmm. And you learn them before the debate. But how, you know, sitting in the Oval Office and there's a crisis, you might have a couple of hours to decide what you're going to do. But, you know, and you've got advisors talking to you. But how sound is your judgment going to be? How fair and balanced? How, you know, taking into account all kinds of different factors. And that is true. Lee Allen was a famous broadcaster in the 60s here in Detroit, DJ. Okay. Anyway, I mean, he's absolutely right. And I did watch, I have to say, I'm not happy. I watched all the way through the three presidential debates with Hillary and Donald. But I didn't learn much that I didn't already know, and I didn't change my opinion. I think a lot of people would say I didn't change their opinion. Why? Because there wasn't enough chance to see these people talking at length to see if they actually had a brain and could problem solve right away, you know, on their feet without necessarily knowing what was coming to them. In Canada, when they have their prime minister debates, not presidential, their leader is the prime minister, four parties, 4 hours long, for four nights in a row, I think that was what it was, and they're stuck up there on the podium for all that time, and they don't get 2 minutes, they get 5 minutes, 10 minutes each, back and forth. And wow, show your stupidity or your intelligence at creative problem solving and the expression of your specific thoughts in that kind of debate.
And it sounds like there's no worry about ratings at all for those TV programs to televise those for five, as long as their responses are.
No, because the main TV broadcast channel is government-owned. there's commercial options, you know, on cable networks throughout Canada, but I'm just saying the main station is the CBC. Okay. Main network is CBC, and they don't even, although they take commercials, thank you very much, for a little extra money, but they are financed primarily by the government, and they are fair and balanced. They don't, even though Justin Trudeau is in office, they don't favor him. Their news shows. And yes, in Detroit, folks, you can catch those if either your cable system or direct broadcast from Windsor, Channel 9 from Windsor. Watch every night, hour-long national news from the CBC. You might be surprised how they cover our news and news in the world differently than our channels. Mm-hmm. I mean, how is that possible? It's all the same stories, right? They don't cover it like you'd ever believe. And do they have a bias towards supporting the government in office? No. Do they, like Fox News, are they actively trying to tear Justin Trudeau down every night? No, not at all. And Fox News has had I would call it a vendetta, but that's my opinion, against Barack Obama since he came in office. That they wanted to slant all of their news to conservative points of view, and of course that means they have to take every chance they can to bring Barack Obama down, just like the vow that the Republicans had. We're going to make sure that what we do in our votes is to vote against anything the president wants. That's what they said 8 years ago. So that's what they basically kept doing all the way through. True to their calling, except not the calling of trying to find answers to real problems in the United States. Just always say no. Just saying there's some interesting ideas in the paper, and of course the Times Herald usually gets those ideas from people who don't live in Dearborn, maybe somewhere else in the state, in fact their main guest editorial is from the Detroit News. They republish one from the Detroit News. But this op-ed, as it's called, this essay from Hamilton, actually comes from from Indiana, where he's in school there. Okay, moving on. Yes, we're always moving. It's a new WHFR journal. We have about 12 minutes to go in the rest of our hour. Remember, you can always check our shows out and recommend them to your friends because they're podcast and they're available from WHFR.FM. Right after the show, there's a new podcast that will be from our in our website. Just click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then select the date of the original broadcast. Times Herald also has a flyer this week where they get extra money from local higher education institutions, and they write stories about us. Actually, they give the institution a chance to write the story, and then they charge us money for the ads. But a lot of our local educational institutions are in there, and the big headline story is about Henry Ford College, written by Henry Ford College, of course. All right. Press and Guide. Okay. This Wednesday's Press and Guide. DeBaggio Hunt face-off for 19 district court judges' seats. Remember that we have our 30-minute interview as part of the WHFR Journal with Gene Hunt. I believe from the end of May, it's indicated which is the podcast that includes his interview. And Susan DeBaggio is on the, I believe it's the June 29th show of the Journal, where she's interviewed for 30 minutes. Now, of course, we interviewed them both before the primary election, but both of them won the top two slots in the primary and therefore are competing in November. Okay, there's also a story in there about the new leadership, either, again, Santana or the Republican Stevens, who didn't respond to any questions. Okay. All right. Well, here's that RISA thing I wanted to do, if I can, John. Where is that letter, too? There's a letter to the editor from, here it is.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. All right.
We got all these newspapers in front of us. Boy, we know a lot if we could only find it.
Yeah.
And then repeat it over the air. Okay. So on the ballot, in addition to the proposal about the Regional Transit Authority, and they're asking for, millage for that. There's another regional, it's regional proposal for millage support, and it goes to the Wayne County Region. It's called the Wayne County Regional Enhancement Millage. Okay. And this measure would add 2 mils to tax bills for property owners for 6 years. So it's only a 6-year period, whereas the Regional Transit Authority is a 20-year proposal, and we explained last time why they needed that 20. That's a serious commitment from the people of this area that would be seriously responded to by state and federal government organizations for additional funding, which they think could double the amount of money available for the regional transit. But they needed that long-term, stable commitment from us, from the taxpayers, and we'll see whether or not how that works out, of course. And in this case, I think that was 2.5 mils. Can't remember now, but this measure is 2 mils, and coughing off mic, that means that the owner of a house worth $150,000, which would have an assessed value of $75,000, would pay an additional $15 a month in taxes as a result of the millage. Now, all of the money generated by the tax would be distributed across Wayne County to districts based on their enrollment. And this is interesting. Excuse me. And this story is done by Katie Hetrick, too, for the Press and Guide, so she knows. She gets it right. I had a beverage. Where's my beverage? I didn't bring it in. Let me cough one more time, John, and I'll be okay.
Okay.
I hope. Maybe not. Well, I know you're waiting with bated breath or on the edge of your seat or something. I hope you're not driving on the edge of your seat. Yeah, we're in public schools. If this Wayne County Regional Enhancement Millage is going to succeed, it would stand to gain $7.8 million from the tax, even though the district residents of Dearborn would only contribute $6.2 million. And that's because of enrollment. We have a little bit more enrollment, so we get a larger share of the money from the whole district.
Okay.
Sounds unfair in a way,
No.
I'm just saying that might be a reason for people of Dearborn to say, oh, so if I put up, let's say, $6, typically, we're going to get back $7.50 to help the schools. So your money actually gets a little more contribution made from this proposal to the Dearborn schools if you live in Dearborn. If you don't live in Dearborn, you might be a little guilty, feel a little negative about that. But everybody, all these school districts would get more money. Now, why do they need more money? It's because school funding was reformed in 1994 here in Michigan. Remember the Headley Act, also known as Proposal A? Okay. It's you know, several issues there, but districts basically can only ask for more taxes for specific purposes because of that, such as construction and renovation costs. So not basic stuff, not, I don't know, landscaping or books or so. Anyway, so a caveat, though, in the law, an exception, an exemption, if you will, in the law that was passed in 94 does allow intermediate school districts, and there are such things, and I have to admit, I know they do great things in Wayne County. I'm not quite sure why we ever have them, though. I know they do some things differently and better than the public school system, and they give services to our public schools. John, can you fill me in more there?
I'm not even sure what about those are, Jay. Intermediate school districts?
That's right.
Yeah.
In Wayne County, its nickname is RESA, Regional Educational Service Agency.
Yes. Well, I know where RESA is, and they do what they conduct seminars, meetings for teachers other type educators. But no, you're talking about something else.
Well, that's one of the problems I think that some voters might have with this, because just like you and I, we're not clear what the heck RESA does. So why do we want them collecting money, even if it's going to help the Dearborn schools? Because we're not quite sure who or what RESA is. And I'm sorry. I know they're doing good things. And I've heard about them every year in different ways, little ways here and there. But in this case specifically, what's going to happen with the money is that they're going to collect it. Why? Because of this loophole. They can collect it for all the other schools and give it back to the schools based on enrollment.
Okay.
All right. So they're not going, they're just going to turn it around. It's just a way to get on the ballot and get more money, operating money for all our schools. Remember that, you know, despite what the state government has told you, they are still not funding our local schools, K-12, to the same extent as they were 10 years ago. Okay? They're still not up. They've been increasing each year, but they dropped so much, okay, during that terrible 2008 crisis and so on, that it's just not there. So this is money that can be used in general across the districts. Interestingly, the spokesperson, Dave Mustonen, former student of mine at Dearborn Public Schools, he said the district, Dearborn, does not have specific plans for how it would spend the extra millage money. Boy, I'd already have a wish list,
right.
I'll tell you, even if it didn't come in. I mean, it must be easy to know, and I'm sure they know, what they need and what they would want to spend it on. But he says they don't have specific plans. Let's look at the continued comment, because that looks a little embarrassing just to stop right there. Okay. Apparently, they need $5 million a year. So the district used to spend $4 to $5 million on building maintenance. With declining funding in recent years, that's fallen to less than $1 million. Wow. Just building maintenance, keeping the place together, the roof from leaking too much, and the windows from, you know, if they're cracked or broken, you got to replace them, you know. And
floor tiles from buckling on the
floors. Leaky water pipes and so on. Yeah. So I don't know how they can continue that very long if their usual building maintenance is $4 to $6 million a year in Dearborn, and they've decreased it to only $1 million, less than $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. They're basically not fixing anything. So, boy, we're going to have big expenses in the future. And Mustonen said that's just one example of where these funds could go. And for Dearborn, how much did I say that would be for Dearborn? Did I say? Wait a minute. Yes, $7.8 million coming from the tax for the residents of Dearborn, who would only actually contribute $6.2 million to the pool of money. And then it's distributed fairly based on enrollment, student enrollment. So it's not really unfair for Allen Park or anybody else in Wayne County. They still get the same amount per enrolled student. Yeah. Okay. All right. It's time. Oh, 3 minutes to go, John. We have to turn away from all these exciting political issues and election issues. Good, he says. Yeah. Please make the elections stop. November 8th, folks. That's November 8th. Okay. Comic-Con is set to happening tomorrow. Remember, this is not Comic-Con. This is Comic-Con. Comic-Con. And this is the one that's the second year of this event. It's a show by women and for women who are in the graphic arts, comic books, graphic novels, and we're doing it right here in Dearborn at the Arab American Museum, okay? And it's going to be tomorrow, okay? Do I have a separate flyer on that? Did I give one to you, John?
Nope,
I didn't. I said I'd look at the story here. What are the hours? Jay is saying. Tickets are $12 in advance, can be purchased at comiccon.com. Tickets at the door are 15. Darn, I don't see the hours. Well, assume that it's going to be like 10 to 4 or something. Could be longer. It might even have an evening session. I'm looking at the second story, and there is no dates on that either. Well, expect to, you know, go there early in the morning. Again, it's the Arab American National Museum on Michigan Avenue, just north of the old City Hall. Free parking, but doesn't say the hours. Children 12 and younger can attend free, so that's great. Okay, and you definitely should consider that. But what other things are happening, John, this weekend?
Well, this weekend in Gros Isle, we're having our Oktoberfest from 4 to 7:30 at the Sacred Heart Parish Hall with an incredible menu of, besides bratwurst and sauerkraut and all the other regular things, we are having German potato pancakes homemade.
Oh, boy.
And sausage soup, which I know is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We also have a group playing polka music. The owner of Southland Music, Dennis Malik, is going to be our polka player for that night. So that'll be a good event.
Okay, so that's Oktoberfest at the Sacred Heart Parish Hall, Park Lane, Gros Isle, Michigan, and it's from 4 to 7:30 tomorrow. Also, I've got here in front of me very special folks. It's in fact, it used to happen here on this campus, but the Native American Festival is happening tomorrow, Saturday, October 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Taylor campus of Wayne County Community College. That's on North Line Road. There's some art gallery exhibits indoors. There's some traditional dancing outdoors. There's a Circle of Life. There's sampling of authentic Native American foods and other arts and crafts. And it's open to the public at no cost, which is a pretty good price.
Yep.
Free, in other words.
A quick shout out to Kay McGowan. She is very much a part of the festival and a elder of the Potawatomi Nation.
Well, you know her personally, huh?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, we did our job then today. Next Friday, we do have, it's the 28th, we have Mary Ann Herring coming in for a 30-minute interview about her candidacy for 12th District U.S. Congress. And I wanted to mention also that Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate, will be on the ballot here in Michigan and 45 other states and could win if enough people vote for her. She's going to be at the Detroit Redford Theater on Lasher Road next Friday at 2 p.m. So the instant you are done listening to the journal, drive right on out there. No. Maybe you could have your radio in your ear or something as you're waiting in line. Because usually, she's got Secret Service protection as a presidential candidate. So you'll have to get there probably an hour or more ahead because they have to check you through the. Usually there's a metal archway that, you know, looking for.